Welcome.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of Find the Youth, Marvin Rome, and my co-host Stan Macklin. We have another show, hot topic for you today, so sit back, listen, allow us to do what we do, and you take the time to find yourself in it all. It's Find the Youth with Marvin Rowan and Stan Macklin right here on your favorite blog talk radio station. And this show is about to start right now. Ow. I like that. All right, welcome to Find the Youth and another show. For you guys out there listening, we have an excellent show for you today. We have a special guest, Armelinda Cortez, in the house today. And we got some topics that we want to talk to you about that has to do with perspective from the Latino community. So you want to be involved in that and you want to listen to what's going on with that. But first, as always, it's our empowerment pledge. And that pledge is I will work on myself. I will work on my issues, my concerns, my hurts, and my pains. You got to work on yourself, people. I will, with support and assistance, strive to develop the tools necessary for me to become a better person. I will welcome growth. I will grow. I will change. I will do all the things that I need to do to work on myself each day, every day, just one day at a time. And if you would take the time to just think about what I just said, just for a minute, and then begin the work of working on yourself, you will see that your world will be a better place and our world will be a better place as well. And that's it. That's the Empowerment Pledge. Go for it. Read it. Look at it. Think about it. That's all I'm asking you to do. All right, without delay, coming to you live from Harrisonburg.
That's where I'm at.
My good friend, Armelinda Cortez, how are you?
I'm good. I think we're waiting on standstill, yeah?
Yeah.
Great.
So you doing okay?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well today. I wanted to welcome you to the show. I want to say thank you for coming on. And we, you know, had a chance or an opportunity to meet in Harrisonburg around some things that was going on. So I decided to say, let's come on and let's talk about different perspectives, you know, because you always get Stan and I perspective. But as we talk, then I know there are broader issues and greater perspectives that we can speak on. And I wanted you to talk a bit about where you're from, and then we'll get into your community and then the views that you want to share about the Latino community and what's good about that, okay?
Great. That sounds perfect.
All right.
Well, you know, I think we got Stan too, yeah?
All right. He's here.
And coming to you live again, my good host and co-host and great friend, Stan Macklin. Stan, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing wonderful. I tell you, I'm just enjoying life and looking forward to our wonderful time and interview with Miss Cortez.
All right.
I did say that right, didn't I?
You did.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, so, you know, I grew up in Augusta County in Virginia. It's about 30 minutes. Well, the county line's about 30 minutes outside of Harrisonburg, south here in Virginia. And, you know, I'm in my mid to upper 20s. You know, I'm not too old. But, you know, I've gotten to spend some time living in a couple of different places in Virginia, Augusta County.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've also lived in Richmond for a good bit of time. And then within the past couple of years have moved back here to the Valley in Harrisonburg. You know, and so I come from a family of mixed folks. You know, I've got Mexican family on one side and white family on the other side, and all folks who come from working class and poor backgrounds, and all folks who come from working the land.
Okay.
So that's a little bit about my people, you know, and kind of a lot, I think, informs a lot of how I think about the world.
Okay.
Okay.
So let me start with this real quick, Stan. Now, are you considered Latina? Because I don't know, so I don't want to be disrespectful. But would you consider yourself
to be
Latina?
Well, I think it's a complicated question. I identify myself as Latino. I do not use the word Hispanic.
Okay.
You know, and I have political reasons for doing that. you know, so,
could you
know,
explain some of that?
Yeah, totally. You know, so I think that I feel like the easiest way to explain it is to sort of think about how the U.S. government and other institutional entities place labels on different races and ethnicities and sort of how they categorize them differently and what they put priority on, right? There's this whole complicated, complex system that does not just affect Latino people, but affects lots of different racial and ethnic groups in different ways, right? So one of the examples, you know, is almost any time you go into, you know, you fill out a federal form of some sort, right? If there's an option for, you know, filling out your race and ethnicity around Latino heritage, right, it almost always, the way they have it set up, right, is usually white, Caucasian, sometimes there's a mixed or more than one race or ethnicity option. There's usually a black slash African American option, an Asian option, and then usually an option for Hispanic, right? And so we could go through every one of those categories and sort of point out all the different problems with the way the white structures have defined race and ethnicity, right? I mean, never mind, you know, that there are black folks who are also Latino, there are black folks who are also Asian, right? I mean, just all of those complications. But the word Hispanic in particular comes from the sort of understanding that people from certain places speak Spanish as a language, and that's the origin of that word, and refers back to a very colonial idea of Latin and Central America, because Spanish is not the indigenous language in those places, right? And so just had you, like you had white European colonizers come to the African continent, you also had white European colonizers coming to Latin America and South America, right? And so there's a lot of the same sort of pushback around, you know, we don't actually want to be called something based on a colonial force, right? And it doesn't sort of lift up all the different, you know, ethnicities that exist within Spanish-speaking communities and sort of where a lot of indigenous communities reside who speak lots of languages, and how a lot of that culture is being wiped out, right? So for me, it's a little bit of a political distinction, right? That, you know, I don't like to refer to a group of folks as Hispanics just because I don't feel like it accurately describes, you know, our community. And then, you know, we have to talk about the complications of the term Latino and, you know, how a lot of Latinos don't necessarily even identify with that term, but identify rather with a nationality, right? You know, amongst other things. So those are some of the complications of, you know, those two words in and of themselves.
Well, you most certainly broke that down, I tell you. What about just being Latino in America then?
Say that one more time for me, Stan.
Well, you know, we're on radio, of course, you know, short and precise, but given the meat as well as the gravy, if you can. But I know we get asked that time all the time, what is it like being African-American or black in America?
Right.
And so
I think that go ahead, Stan, I'm sorry.
No, I just want to be specific. I mean, I don't think you're absent from issues that confront us, and because there are some other things we want to get to, but racism is for one. I know that the supremacist powers would like to try to pit the cultures against each other to try to maintain dominance, and they've successfully done that. And I think that those days are coming to an end where such as African-American Latinos are learning to work together to make a difference concern an issue. But your perspective, Latino in America, since you broke down so wonderfully between why you prefer Latino instead of Hispanic.
Yes, he did.
I'm educated. I think that I'm glad. I mean, I think that, you know, like you said, I think a lot of folks in the Latino community do experience some of the same things in, you know, in this country around, you know, police profiling and brutality, you know, incarceration rates, right, the sort of like growing educational gaps for our folks, you know. And then we also, you know, obviously have to talk about things like, you know, poverty and, you know, employment rates, you know, all the usual things that I think affect a lot of different racial and ethnic groups that aren't white in this country. And then, you know, I think you have the very complicated and delicate situation of immigration that I think is,
yeah,
is probably what I think mixed up with all the other stuff. It's one of the things that I think is, you know, is one of the most pressing issues in the community, particularly because it's so wrapped up with incarceration and with police profiling that it's affecting people and people's communities on a daily basis, right? You know, you're having families ripped apart, families thrown in jail, sent back to other countries, you know. So I think that that's part of it, you know, that's part of the story. And then I think that one of the other things that I feel like we never talk about when we're talking about any racial or ethnic group, you know, and sort of the complications and nuances within that around gender, around sexuality, and around class, right? I think all three of those things, you know, we all know people in our own communities who are doing just all right for themselves, you know. I mean, they, like, they have good jobs, they're making good money, you know, they're wearing their nice clothes, they got a nice TV in their house. And that's all fine and great. And then we also don't talk about some of the class disparities, right, that are happening for other folks in our community. We don't always talk about how women of color, you know, Latino women have, like, very very high health risk rates around particular things, right, and how there are state legislators who are particularly attacking women's rights around health care in general and then how that disproportionately affects Latino women, right, and Black women as well. You know, so I think that there are all those nuances as well, you know, being Latino or Latina in America. And then I think the other thing I would say is, you know, just what you mentioned earlier, Stan, this sort of piece around this I think, covert operation by right-wing forces to pit different races and ethnicities against each other, especially Black communities and Latino communities.
Right.
And so I think one of the other things that, you know, that does happen, you know, with this conversation around gender and sexuality and class is also a conversation that we have to have around assimilation, you know, and what that means and which ethnic groups, you know, and Latinos being one of them in a large trajectory of history within the United States, of being asked to be as white as possible, to act as white as possible, and to join the quote-unquote white side, right, politically, right? That's the sort of, like, demand from the political structure, because the political structure knows that if we turn around and look at each other and say, actually, this Black person over here, or, you know, this person from Thailand, or this person from Iran, you know, have more in common with me as a person of color in this country than this white person, you know, they know that they would have a political force to reckon with. So I think that that's another thing that affects the community, and I think there are divides, you know, and the own sort of dynamics around race and ethnicity and colorism that happens within the Latino community like many others.
Wow, definitely very informative. Now, we know that as you mentioned, immigration reform is a big one, and it seems like the religious right or the GOP has taken an effort to make it a step-by-step approach, a piecemeal situation. Why is that so unacceptable to the reformers, the immigration reformers, that just find that not a clear pathway to citizenship?
Well, you know, I think that's probably a show in and of itself, San. I mean, I think that, I think I want to clarify for folks, because I don't know, you know, if folks who are in the Latino community or who are involved in, you know, immigrant rights movements, I don't know that folks actually understand that there's, like, a pretty big divide within immigrant communities right now there's a pretty big divide about how to ask for, you know, I mean, you sort of have, within the immigrant rights movement, right, you have folks who are demanding comprehensive immigration reform, right, and then you have other folks, you know, who are demanding other things, of which citizenship may or may not be a piece of it, right? So there are folks who are who are advocating for, that we're actually talking about some other things, and standing in solidarity with other communities around the, you know, ever-increasing prison incarceration rates, around deportation, around the issue of border security, right, and things of that nature, right? So I think it's important for folks to understand that there's not consensus within the community, you know, across all kinds of different factors, everything from country of origin to age, you know, that is really different, you know, and I don't want to liken it to, you know, the civil rights movement and the Black Power movement, but I think you have some of those similar dynamics, right? You have people falling at different political lines, but I think the way that the mainstream media covers it, right, is that there's just this monolithic group of brown people who all sort of agree on the same thing, right, which is not true.
That's good insight.
Okay, yeah.
It was wonderful insight, because I know even within the African-American community there's differences, and there's things that are used even within the structure of progress and so forth. The old thing concerning the house Negro and the field Negro is still in play. And, I think we're getting past the color stroke thing. I think we are, which means if you're light, you're all right, and you're brown, you can hang around, but if you're black, get back. It was good that you brought that out. It was good insight. Wouldn't you say so, Marvin?
Yeah, very informative. That leads me to this question. Now, you talked about immigration reform, and from the ground now, from the root, grassroots level of people, what would be the voice of the Latino community in terms of immigration reform if you could be the voice of one community or another overall?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for me, it's not about taking a position on comprehensive immigration reform in particular, right? It's more about actually questioning the sort of limitations that are put on the lives of people who are undocumented in this country, right?
Okay.
And so I think that from my position, it's actually holding our government accountable, and particular structures accountable for the deportations that are happening, right? I mean, I think that, you know, and I think that this is where it gets complicated, right? And I think that this is where and how black communities and brown communities are pitted against each other, right, is you have a lot of the immigrant rights movement who specifically said President Obama has deported more people than any other president in the history of this country, right? Last year alone, there were 2 million people that were deported. Right. And so you have, I think you have a lot of black folks, right, whose response is you can't just blame this on the president, right? And so, you know, it's this really interesting tension, I think, that comes up a lot of time. And for me, you know, as somebody who tries to stay in solidarity with black communities and who understands all the nuances of Latino communities in a particular way. And, like, obviously there are things that I'm blind to, just like anybody else in their communities. To me, there's this piece around how do we hold institutions accountable. And, yes, we should hold the president accountable, right, particularly around providing immediate relief and solution for folks who are, you know, what they call low-priority deportations, right? And we also have to have a conversation about, you know, how are we talking about, you know, private for-profit prison companies that are profiting off of both immigrant communities and black communities being more and more incarcerated as the years go on, right?
True.
So to me, the conversation around immigration has to shift to that place, you know. And so, you know, we can pass all the piecemeal legislation that we want, but at the bottom line to me is that, like, there needs to be immediate relief for the numbers of deportations that are happening in this country.
And playing the devil's advocate, if I could use that phrase,
mm-hmm.
but what the posture is, well, they broke the law. They're here illegally, and that was a no-no. And there
mm-hmm.
has to be some account. But at the same time, there's some hypocrisy with that because some of those same individuals are the ones who are main individuals who are in the produce, who are helping people to have that wonderful Thanksgiving dinner that they have every year and so forth, produce and different things and that, jobs that a lot of Americans just don't want to do, not that they can't do it. And so what about that?
Well, I think that, you know, when I sort of think about the legal question, right, to me, it always, that argument always comes back to who in this country, from the beginning, from its founding,
mm-hmm.
you know, in this country, was founded on racist and sexist principles, right?
Yes.
Is that this country has always defined, the institutions have always defined for itself, you know, from the time that they struck blood, you know, on the first indigenous peoples that were on this land, the institutions have decided who is legal and who is not legal here, who counts
right.
and who doesn't count, and where are the lines and the borders of where
mm-hmm.
people have to fall in line, right? So when I hear the question from people, and I hear it a lot, you know, the question
mm-hmm.
of like, well, they came here illegally,
mm-hmm.
I have to sit, and especially if they're like folks who are also from other marginalized communities, I have to sit
mm-hmm.
down and say, you know, let's actually look at the history in this country of who has been
mm-hmm.
criminalized because of the color of their skin or because of their gender, right, and who
mm-hmm.
has even been deemed worthy as a person who has legal standing, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
so if we look at the history, you know, of slavery in this country and how Black folks were criminalized and were not considered legal entities or people even for that matter, right, you know, because of some institutional lines that were drawn, right, to me those are the sort of things that I actually want to be talking about with people because I think it gets us, I think when we're just like, oh, there's a border and it's illegal, we don't actually get to talk about the sort of structures in this country that uphold, you know, the criminalizing of anybody who the government says isn't deemed worthy of citizenship, right, or what does citizenship
mm-hmm.
even mean, and who has access to that to be able to make decisions in a government that is making decisions about our own lives, right? To me, that's the question. I'm just like, if I'm living in a place, regardless of whether or not you think I'm legal, right, if you tell me that I have no right to have a voice to make
mm-hmm.
decisions in the place that I live, then we're not actually living in a democracy, right? And I feel like it exposes the myth of the American democracy in so many ways.
Well, on March the 10th, you're going to be serving as moderator of
a
panel discussion, yes, and talking about America's original sin, and you kind of got into some of that, basically institutional racism and exclusion, but is that some of the caliber and the gist of as moderating how you will, of course, I know you'll carry out your work as moderating the panel, but I'm sure you'll be sharing some of those insights. Like, this is just really a wonderful time of learning for me and dialogue because I don't pretend or profess that I know it all, and it's just good to have insight coming from you as a Latino sister.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that, you know, I feel like, you know, I know you and Stan, you and I have talked about this before, but just sort of, I think I've been thinking a lot, and I was thinking a lot before coming on the show today about kind of the need to build allegiance between Black and Latino communities because of
mm-hmm.
some of our shared
mm-hmm.
struggles, right? And to me, that
mm-hmm.
doesn't mean conflating our struggles. That doesn't mean that, like, we are experiencing the same thing. But it does mean that there are institutions that, you know, have the boot on our neck and sometimes in different ways, right, that it doesn't always look the same, but it's the same institution, right? And so I walk into this conversation thinking a lot about black-brown solidarity and what it's going to take to build that with folks, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that that's often where, you know, because I think that education is a part of it, right? You know, I was doing some research earlier today, right? You know, and there's examples of black and Latino communities working together in the United States as far back as 1546, right? Mm-hmm. And nobody talks about that, right? Nobody talks about, you know, in 1855, mm-hmm. there were Mexicans who helped 4,000 black slaves escape in Texas, right?
Wow.
No, I mean, so I think that there's part of this sort of erased history of our mm-hmm. communities acting in solidarity with one another to say, get the boot off our neck. We actually don't agree with the way the system is treating us. And instead, we've been pitted against each other. So to me, I think a lot about what does it take to not only educate ourselves about how our communities have worked in the past, also about the things that haven't gone well in the past, and how do we build relationships with each other? What is it going to take to sort of break down our own stereotypes about our different communities so that we can work together? You know, because to me, I just don't think that we can actually confront institutions of power around white supremacy, you know, mm-hmm. if we're not working together. I just really True. Believe that we have more power together.
Mm. Well, we can't cover it all in one day. So can I invite you back next week to kind of follow up? Would you be interested? Great, because I have a few more questions that I really want to ask. I hope you don't mind. This is my question because you talked about it early, and I know we don't have a lot of time to cover everything, but how do you mentioned the institutions that we needed to hold accountable. Mm-hmm. What would be some of those institutions, and how can we begin to hold those institutions accountable?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I think it's all the way from, you know, the local level to the federal level to, you know, it's the public institutions, and there's also private institutions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, we could talk about any of those aspects for any given point in time, right? But I think about things like, you know, the banking system and why is it that, you know, basically black and brown people got blamed for the housing market crash, but nobody wanted to talk about all the rich white men who basically bartered to black and brown communities and sort of the structures that they put in place to do that, right?
Wow.
I mean, so to me that's an example of how you would hold somebody accountable. Let's not just blame the people who are getting caught up in this, but how did the banks actually go after black and brown communities? How did they recruit
right.
them? How did they sign them up?
Giving them
right?
houses because
to me,
yeah.
yeah. You know, it's not like we just walked into the bank and they gave us a house. We know how that works. You know, they redline our districts and have been doing that for, you know,
right.
decades. You know,
wow.
but when they realize that they can make money on us, right, then it's suddenly a whole other situation. Then they suddenly want our names. They want our email addresses. They want our lists, right, because we can make them a buck, you know. And so to me, those are the conversations that I want to have. So I think everything from the banking institutions to – you know, I know we talk about it here in Harrisonburg all the time. Structures like the city council and the school board need to be more representative of the populations that are here, you know. So I think that those are some examples of some things, you know, but we can certainly talk about it some more in the future. Because I think that, you know, I think the other thing that happens, and you all have mentioned this before, is this piece around tokenization, right? I feel like efforts mm-hmm. to hold institutions accountable,
yeah.
You know, over the past 30 years have honestly a lot of the times led to tokenization, right? And so we have seats at the table, but we don't have real power at those tables. And we're not setting the table. Somebody else is setting the table for us.
Right.
True. Well, we got about a minute left. So we got to get out of here, but we can fix that by coming back next week. Stan, you want to get us out of here?
I'm just feasting off of the food for thought that's been exposed to us by our wonderful sister, Armelinda, and I just want to encourage everybody, it's time we come together and work together to make a difference, and we can do it. Don't give up. Don't be discouraged. Continue to stay focused.
Well, there you have it. An education for our listeners right here on Finding You, Marvin Rome and Stan Macklin. How do we hold these institutions accountable, and how can we talk about gender, sexuality, and class and educate ourselves at the same time? How can we work together? Come back next week and find out right here on Finding You all day Wednesday between 3 and 3:30. Love on somebody. Be good. We'll talk to you soon. All of the bad.